So the fait accompli, I guess what you mean by that is that the government wasn't really prepared to listen to anybody. Who in the working area that you know of, not just in PDC but around the city, what impression did you get of people who were in favour of it, and what might their reasons have been?
I didn't know anyone who was in favour of it. That's why the other buyer was giving me a little dig. No, I didn't know anyone who thought it was a good idea.
And this is among the other shops that you're aware of as well.
Yes, because I knew quite a few of our opposition. On a personal basis.
How did the staff from the different department stores around the town, did they, you mentioned opposition, was there much sense of there being opposition, or?
Oh yes, we were all competitors.
Sure.
I mean, we were all yes, we were all courting the same customers. A lot like I'm going back to fabrics again. There were wholesalers. If you took up a range, and when you say a range, it's a mix and match that tells a story. If you took it up, then they would not sell it elsewhere in the town. That was yours exclusively, but you had to take a reasonable amount of the range and a reasonable meterage.
So what you're saying is that the different department stores would not necessarily try and double up on the same
No.
material.
No.
Was this an unspoken agreement, or just
With your wholesaler, yeah. Because you wanted exclusive rights if you were going to spend that much money on a range of fabrics, you wouldn't want to see it in another store.
Which, of course, is different to the way things are now. You would find similar products in the stores around the town, say Noel Leeming or Harvey Norman, whatever. I'm thinking more of things like just appliances and such like. I don't know about cloth.
Well, you see, there are so many reasonable ready-mades. There aren't so many home sewers now. Arthur Toy, he closed his store, but there's another one open. But Brian Gaskin did very well because he went upmarket and specialised in the bridal side of things. The middle market was where you really made your bread and butter. But now, with so many retailers and so much stock, I often wonder how are they going to sell it? This is in apparel, and even like children's wear and that. We used to stock the fabrics for babies' gowns, and it had a percentage of wool, and it was very expensive. But we always stocked that because the customer wanted to make their own baby gowns. Well, that wouldn't happen now.
No,
Stretch and grow and cheap as chips.
I guess the big problem for clothing, or for fabric, would be that after the throwing out of import licensing and the introduction of free trade, you could buy ready-made clothing from sources that were so cheap that you could, as you said earlier, why would you make them? Was that, would that be your observation?
Yes, that's what happened.
Mm.
Some retailers now are offering ranges that are produced in New Zealand,
mm.
but they are the upper
mm.
upper level, and they are expensive mm. comparatively.
Did you observe at all, either from your department or surrounding departments, the effect of the throwing out of import licensing and the introduction of free trade on your New Zealand suppliers, on the people
mm.
in New Zealand who made things and
yeah.
sold them here?
Yeah.
What kinds of observations do you have?
Well, Erin Ryder was a local manufacturer here in Palmerston North,
mm.
And there was another.
What did they make?
They made budget frocks. You know,
mm.
They were well priced. We used to go and clear their line and
mm.
have the Erin Ryder.
Mm.
Frocks for our sale. They were what I would term mumsy frocks,
mm.
and but they couldn't keep in business. And there was another firm that produced alpine type clothing, and they closed.
Mm.
But you see, at that stage. I went to Australia.
Hmm. Yes. What year did you go to Australia?
76, was it, that I joined? It was
mm.
12 years. Yeah, that's right. We went in 87, I think it was,
mm.
87, and came back in 89.
Mm. So even before you left, you could see the
yes.
effects of the removal of tariffs on local clothing makers. Were there a few clothing makers around Palmerston?
The only one that I ever dealt with was
mm.
Erin Ryder. No
mm.
doubt there were others.
Yeah, yeah. What was your working day like? I mean, how did it begin and how would it progress? Just a perfectly ordinary day when you didn't have a buyer's meeting or going somewhere, but just a normal day's work.
Well, when you were buying for the next season,
mm.
and you were always buying for spring, buying for winter in the hottest months,
mm.
and vice versa. You would have an appointment book where you would have the fabrics came to me, but when I was on the fashion floor, you went to a motel or hotel to view the range.
Mm.
So you had, those were when you were doing the intensive buying.
Mm.
And then you had all your bookwork and
mm.
whatever. But apart from that, you were out on the floor, and I always thought of myself as a participating buyer. I'd get up and clean the mirror.
Mm.
Not every buyer would.
Mm.
But I just felt, you know, I had a good rapport with the girls, and they were very skilled. One girl particularly was just so skilled with displaying and dressing the mannequins. That was something. We did have a fashion parade that I was involved in with the on the fashion floor with ready-made garments.
Mm.
And Lorraine Downs was one of our models.
Mm.
And I might have been head of the department, but my goodness, I was her go-to boy, making appointments for her hairdos and whatever.
Mm.
But she was charming.
Mm. So what portion of your working day, a normal day, would be spent
on the
serving the customers with this?
Roughly. The full day.
The full day.
And you're just talking meal breaks, like when your staff weren't. Mm. And it was just if you were well caught up. You can imagine when you came back from Auckland, you had a mountain of paperwork.
Yeah.
And you still had a lot of paperwork when you were actually doing the buying. And of course, you, as the head of the department, you had to, and this was for both the fabrics and the fashion floor, you were required to go to Inward Goods and sign off the invoices for payment. And you had to, they had a great system. You had a, they had a little apron stapled on with the retail price and the total, and you knew what percentage it should be, you know. So you had your calculator and you looked at the invoice and looked at what the value of the stock was going into the store, and you knew straight away that the meterage was correct, the markup was correct, and you signed it off to be paid.
Mm.
So that was Inward Goods, where the goods were landed.
Mm.
I was so fortunate there. There was a nice man, and if he knew that I was waiting for a bit of fabric, he would bring it up on his shoulder and deliver it by hand, you know. I mean, people work together so well.
Was that something you think that was peculiar to, to PDC, or peculiar to that period in our history?
Well, I have nothing to base it on with other firms, but I'm just saying that one department would always help the other.
And was there, were you aware of there being any particular sort of racial mix in the staff at PDC? I mean, were there perhaps Asian or Maori or Polynesian staff there in addition to European?
No.
Mm.
No. I can't remember. Mainly European. Mm. I can't remember even any Maori staff. There could have been.
And what about the what dress codes did you require for your staff, and were you told about when you joined as a staff member? Tell me a little bit about those.
Yeah, well, the staff were always required to wear a navy and white. Buyers were allowed to wear other garments, and often, like in the fabric shop, I would wear a garment that had been made, that I'd made, with the fabric and the pattern. When I was moved to the fashion floor, Mr. Goodwin told me in no uncertain terms there would be no homemade garments worn. So I had to have a new wardrobe. I did cheat.
Did you have a few homemade ones that he didn't know about?
He wouldn't have picked them. I don't think he would have.
No.
But he wasn't on the floor. But that was his ruling. Mm. That was his ruling. When we went buying for the fashion floor, he would accompany us. Mm. And but not the fabrics.
Tell me about the social life around PDC. I mean, there were other staff have said there was a social club and various activities. Mm. Tell me about those.
Well, whenever we used to have socials up in Waldings again, and we would have like a staff party, and everything provided, and this one I can remember very clearly was where they put on the skit of "Are You Being Served?" And it was hilarious. There was lots of good fun. And when a staff member was leaving, they would give that staff member the opportunity of picking out so many people to have a farewell party.
Mm.
Well, when it was my turn, I chose differently. I didn't want to just choose so many people and leave others out. So I said, well, if they would kindly provide morning tea for all the staff, and we had two staff rooms, a non-smoking and a smoking staff room, and I sat in on both the morning teas.
Mm. Were those two staff rooms close together with just a door between them, or how did that work?
They were several doors down the corridor.
Mm.
We had extensive rooms that looked down on the grocery department. Then they came right round, and there were the toilets were there, and the staff room. You took your own lunch, and you could go and sit and have your lunch in the staff room. Quite often there'd be a group doing the Dominion crossword, and they'd often call out and ask for a clue, and sometimes I could help. It was amicable. From my point of view, it was amicable.
Mm.
I know there was frictions and other, but I tried to avoid that.
Sure. I mean, what's the frictions in other areas? What were they usually based around? Is personality or
personality?
Right. Yeah. I mean, did the was any of that based around union issues?
No, I think it was more competitiveness.
Sure. Yeah. What provisions were made for holidays, and how did that work? I mean, how many weeks a year did you get, and how
two
was
weeks,
it?
Hmm? Two,
2 weeks. 2 weeks. Okay, and how did
at
you?
At statutory holiday.
Yeah, yeah.
You applied. Well, you had discussions within your own staff to see when they would want to be, and we worked it out in that way.
Mm.
You were sometimes given a part timer while, if it was a busy part of the year, you were given a part timer to cover the lunch breaks and so
sure.
on, while that other staff member had their holiday. The co-op owned a house at Taupo. Were you told of that?
No.
They had a holiday house, and that was you went in a ballot for that, and it was a lovely it was a homely, slightly shabby place, and it had a hot pool downstairs, and it had a magnificent view of the mountain. I just can't remember the name of the road, but you turned right and went up the hill just where Manuel's motels were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was most relaxing. You had it for a week, and that was, you made application and you went in a ballot for that.
So that was, and that was available just in summer or in winter as
no,
well?
Right.
Did most staff put their names in the ballot?
It was well used.
Mm.
And you know, that was, with the demise of PDC, that was the first thing that went was the holiday house. And I've often thought, why didn't we, a group of us, form a syndicate and buy it?
Mm.
You know, we could have.
Mm. Mm.
But of course, we weren't privy to everything that was going on at that stage either.
You had left PDC before it actually closed for good, I guess. How many years before the collapse of PDC did you leave?
When I was leaving, I had one or two incidents that gave me some misgivings.
Yeah.
But it all happened in my absence.
Mm.
And when Arthur and I returned in 89, they were having, some, you see, were paid off redundancies, but the loyal ones that stayed on, they got nothing. And when we returned in, I think it was November 89, it was just at the last, they were selling everything, and I couldn't go into the store. I didn't want to see those good friends and staff members hanging in there and you know, witnessing it all. Really, when the plaza opened, it's my opinion that people thought they were shopping in PDC departments, but in actual fact they weren't. They were rented out to opposition, and so naturally our shoe department, which was up one floor, and our fashion department, we suffered for that.
I guess PDC was trying to move with the times,
yes,
as they saw it. What were the, you did leave before the final,
yes,
end, but what, from where you're sitting, were the main elements that led to the demise of what was once such a strong company? What were the main elements that brought it about?
Well, I just felt that putting tenants in that were in direct opposition to our own departments.
Mm. But the co-op movement, just to look at the wider co-op movement for a moment, when you started with PDC, were there still a number of co-op groceries and butcheries,
yes,
and the like around the area? Any idea roughly how many from that you can? No. And they presumably would have dropped off one by one during your period.
Mm.
What was, do you have any recollection of people talking about that and why it was happening?
Yeah. a lot of people were upset.
Yeah. What actually caused it, do you think? Presumably they were sold because they were uneconomic. Why was that, do you think?
It would only be executives that could really answer that.
Sure, sure. No, that's fair enough. So when you, by the time you left, were there any other co-op shops around? I know there was a motorbike shop, which was probably still going, but the little groceries and the like, were they all pretty much finished by then? Yeah. And there was a co-op bank too, I believe.
I don't remember
that. A bank. No, that's all right. I think there was one that it but that's
it. Oh, you mean in the share office? Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. There was a bank where you could. I used that myself.
Mm.
We were supporting our son in America. He was training. As a chiropractor, and the exchange rate was abysmal at that time, so we were saving very hard, and we were saving in the co-op share office. Yes.
Was there a co-op or PDC superannuation scheme for staff?
Yes, if you wished.
Yeah, how did that work?
I never joined it.
Mm.
Simply that, you know, when I joined, I didn't know how long my working life would be there.
Mm.
I didn't envisage the wonderful career that I would have with them.
Mm.
And I didn't join them.
Did you have any influence over the selection of your own staff when positions became vacant?
Yes.
Yeah. What were your priorities when you were interviewing? What were you looking for?
It's always hard just to put your finger on people. They either come across or they don't.
Mm.
I would. The one girl that I can remember, her name was Rebecca, a young married woman, and she was to be shared between the fabrics and the sewing machines.
Mm.
And it just brought out the difference in my attitude to my job and Mrs. Tarr's attitude to hers. She was a very successful lady. But she told Rebecca, demonstrate, and if they don't buy, don't pressurise them. You know, there'll be another one. And when I interviewed Rebecca, I said, now, when you've sold the bit of fabric, you look for extensive sales. You ask them, have they got matching thread, and their zip and whatever, and we had a chuckle, Joy Tarr and I, about it, because it just highlighted where my focus was, and I mean, it took nothing away from Joy, because she ran a very successful. A very, very successful a department. But of course, again, we were both in the same industry, weren't we? Home sewing, and I mean,
yes.
It was amazing.
Well, you can't sell fabric without the buyer having a sewing machine.
Exactly.
So you were sort of on the same side. Was any of your choices based around anything that was specific to PDC?
Oh well, we.
What I mean is, what nowadays people refer to as a workplace culture, and you've talked about this a bit, about the loyalty that people had to the organisation. Did any of that kind of side of things influence the way you thought about people who were applying for jobs with you?
Yes. Mm.
So what were you looking for in that area?
Well, people that would be compliant with that would accept those, well, they were a set of rules, in want of another word, that management expected of the staff.
Now, the co-op movement, as a movement in Palmerston North, began in the 1930s with the chap, I know his name is Gordon Brown, I
think.
That's right. And the philosophy around it was, I suppose you could say, a gentle form of socialism, the idea being that the customers would own the company, not a big faceless organisation. When you were at PDC, were you still aware of that philosophy underpinning the PDC and the co-op movement as a whole?
Because there was a manager, a co-op manager, an executive apart from the PDC manager.
And were you aware of there being that same, I suppose you could say, almost socialist philosophy? I don't mean in a radical way,
no,
but in a practical way. Did you still feel that that was a part of PDC in the way it might have been a part of, say, Constant and Cunningham's the DIC?
Yes.
How did that show itself in?
Well, customers were loyal because they were being rewarded.
Yes. At the end of every year, you brought your tickets in for your sales, and you got a discount.
Mm.
Yeah, which is. So you weren't really around when the collapse took place. Was PDC Plaza in existence when you left?
Mm-hmm.
Right. What were the arguments you were aware flowing around that area as to why the plaza was being set up? You've told me that, in a sense, you were letting your opponents into your building, but presumably management and the people who were controlling everything, they saw it differently. What kinds of arguments did they put forward as to why the plaza was being set up in that way?
I've been on several buying trips with Mr. Goodwin during the building of that plaza, and I've got to say, it seemed to me that Les had told the story so often, and he was sort of, he was so involved with it all and so sure that he was right that I used to think privately he was building a monument to himself. It was Les Goodwin's plaza. But I mean, that was my personal.
Sure. Yeah.
I never shared that.
No.
Well, you see, he lived, his name escapes me, but the manager of the co-op, he went first, and then Les went to Australia, and then it was Mr. Colin Dyer that took over.
Yes, no, I talked to Colin the other day. He's out in Fielding. Were you with the co-op when, or PDC with the co-op generally, when they bought the Izadium? The Izadium being the building, it's now a gym, I think. And before that, it was a video shop. And large building on the corner of...
Yeah, I know it, because I played badminton in it.
Right. What did co-op use the Izadium for? What was it? was it groceries or something like that?
I can't answer that.
Mm. Mm. Now, you've still got a few more things on your piece of paper there, Norma, but I don't want to...
I was trying to think of something that hadn't involved other departments, you know,
yes,
that you've already heard.
Well, I've only heard of some of them because the meeting that I had the other day, there were about 8 people there, and that was really good. But sometimes you get a better idea of an individual's job talking to the individual as I am with you now. So any things that you can remember around PDC would be of interest.
They were very strong on promotion, and we would have Pirate Day, and everybody would dress with a turban your interpretation of what a pirate would, and they'd say, so-and-so, the slasher's been here, you know, and it was a sail throughout. And I can remember being in the fabric shop, and it was the last piece of fabric of a certain design, and I was taking it, I was in the window and I was taking it down, and this customer looking in and wondering what I was doing in there with my gumboots and spotted scarf on. So that was a sort of an annual sale. But we had such a wonderful display department. They could paint up signs and, you know, you ordered your tickets and for the sale, and then they'd bring them over. They'd dress the windows. Mr. Gooding used to dress his own windows because he was part of Latter and Gooding prior to joining PDC. But no, the display would come and do all that for us.
How many display staff did you have?
They had a special building. It was a building between, it was adjacent to the car park between PDC and the old Club Hotel building,
right,
which was the fabric shop.
Yes.
Now, that upstairs area then was used for social occasions, and it was really well furbished and a lovely venue, and that's where the socials were held in those after the Walding tea.
So the design, or as we could say, the shop dressing department was obviously, must have been quite a well-staffed department.
Yes, it was.
So would there have been roughly how many people? Just at a guess.
I think there'd be 5 permanents. I'm thinking of the manager. He was a Taekwondo exponent, and I got the job of making his uniforms. And there was 2 girls that, and then I can remember the 2 men coming over, 2 young men, to do the displays. See, I was never in there because, we had Mr. Kuldane, I think his name was, up on the executive floor, and he was responsible for advertising. Mm. So you took your copy up to him.
Mm.
And so was all very well run.
I'll just change folders.